do it tomorrow. Which is completely consistent with the Montenegrin mindset. They're all about relaxing, resting, putting stuff off to tomorrow. And it's the opposite of the American mindset. It's the opposite of the Silicon Valley mindset. You know, we stay late at work. We go in on our off day. We say things like, don't put off to tomorrow what you could do today. And so we're going to talk today about rest, which on the one hand is a pretty simple topic. I'm sure you all know what rest means. But on the other hand, it's an incredibly complicated topic. You know, what's the difference between resting and just being lazy? How much rest do we need? How in the world can you justify resting when there's so many people who depend on you? You know, like if you're a parent, your children, or your employees, or your customers. Are you resting as long as you're not actually at your day job? But maybe the most important question to consider is, what does God say about rest? So if you have your Bible or your worship booklet, or you just want to read from the screen, we're going to look at our passage for today, which comes from the Gospel of Mark. Mark 2, verse 23 through chapter 3, verse 6. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" And he said to them, "Have you not heard what David did? When he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for any but the priests to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him. And he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here." And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. And he looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart. And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. The Pharisees went out and immediately held counsel with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. This is the word of the Lord. So we're going to use this passage as a jumping off point to look at what God says in the rest of Scripture about rest. We'll have 3 points: the command, the gift, and the way. So let's start with the command. When I was a college student, I had absolutely no concept of Sabbath rest. And you know, don't get me wrong, I was a Christian. I wanted to live faithfully to what the Bible said. But I think I would have been quite surprised to have it pointed out to me that I was consistently in violation of what Scripture teaches about rest. For example, my senior year, I was a full-time student. So right there, that's essentially, you know, my full-time job, 40 to 50 hours per week on school. But on top of that, you know, trying to be a good Christian, I got super involved in our campus ministry. I was in a Bible study that was led by a staff member for 2 hours a week. I myself led a Bible study for freshmen. We met for 2 hours. I had to prepare for an hour. I was mentored by someone on staff. We met each week for 2 hours. I myself mentored 3 younger students. I met with each of them for 1 hour a week. I led the worship band, which meant I had a 1 hour planning meeting with the other leaders, band practice for 2 hours, and then our weekly meeting for 4 hours, not to mention the time I had to spend practicing on my own. And because I led the worship band, I also had to go to the weekly meeting, planning meeting, for 1 hour a week. I was also on the leadership team. We met for once a week. I was the president of the entire ministry, student president, which meant that I had an extra hour of duties each week. And so if you're doing the math, that was 20 extra hours a week that I was committed to in my campus ministry. You know, that's like a part-time job. Now, I'm not sharing that list to show off. I'm sharing it so you can see how insane I am. Because I was trying to be a faithful Christian, but what I didn't realize at the time was I was actually living in sin. I was rebelling against the one who had created me because I never rested. I never observed a Sabbath, which, of course, is something that God commands. So if we look at our sermon text in Mark, it only really makes sense if we consider what's written earlier in the Bible. You see, the Pharisees accuse Jesus of doing something that's not lawful to do on the Sabbath. So there seems to be some sort of shared understanding of what the Sabbath is and what you should or should not do on the Sabbath. And where does this idea come from? The Ten Commandments. Specifically, the fourth commandment found in Exodus 20. That's what we used for our confession of sin today. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work." And so the Lord tells the people of Israel to remember the Sabbath, to keep it holy, to keep it set apart. And they should do that by working for 6 days and then resting on the seventh day. But the question that often arises around commands that are given in the Old Testament, commands that are given to Israel, the question that often arises is, does this still apply today? Especially in light of this passage in Mark. Does the fourth commandment still apply today? Well, yes. It still applies to us. And I'm going to go through three reasons why the commandment still applies. So first, and this will just be brief, the first reason that the fourth commandment still applies is because all the Ten Commandments still apply. You know, we don't ask this question about any of the other commandments. No one's ever like, "Do not murder. Does that still apply today?" Or the other Ten Commandments, "Don't have other gods, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness," right? You know, we would never ask if they still apply. Of course they do. So why do we ask if the Sabbath still applies? Second reason, the commandment itself gives us a reason which shows that its basis is actually in the created order. So it's not just a civil or ceremonial law for Israel as a nation. The command to observe a Sabbath rest is a vital component of how God designed humanity. So in Exodus 20, right after God gives that fourth commandment, he gives a reason. This is what he says immediately after the commandment. "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them." So what this is doing is pointing back to the creation story. The reason that God gives is based on how he created everything. And we find that in Genesis chapter 2. This is one of the reflection quotes. "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day." And so if we as humans are made in the image of God, then we too are made to rest from our work because God rested from his work. You see, in the first two chapters of Genesis, which are the first two chapters of the entire Bible, we see work and rest as they were meant to be. And then in Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve sin, and that's referred to as the fall of mankind. Sin enters the world. Everything from then on is tainted by sin and death. But before that, before Genesis 3 and Genesis 1 and 2, everything is good. Sin hasn't ruined anything yet. And it's in Genesis 1 and in Genesis 2 that we see God working to create everything and then resting. So because both work and rest existed before sin enters the picture, both work and rest are a good part of God's design. God worked and God rested. And so we have to make sure that we don't see work as a result of sin or a punishment for sin. And we don't see rest as relief from punishment. There are pure and good forms of work and rest that existed before sin ever entered the picture. Okay, that was the second reason the command is based in creation. The third reason that the command still applies is Jesus affirms Sabbath rest in our passage from Mark. Now, what's maybe the most obvious about our passage is that Jesus doesn't seem to be as strict about the Sabbath as the Pharisees. And I'll come back to that. But first, notice what Jesus doesn't say. He doesn't say to the Pharisees, it's okay to pluck grain and to heal because we don't need to observe a Sabbath anymore. That's not what he says. The way that Jesus answers assumes that the Sabbath will still be observed. He doesn't tell the Pharisees that they're wrong about observing the Sabbath. He tells them they're wrong in how they observe the Sabbath. You see, Jesus had no problem announcing changes in the new covenant. And so if Jesus intended to announce the end of observing a Sabbath, he would have. But he didn't. And so the command to rest and observe a Sabbath still stands. And so if you don't set apart a day to rest each week, you're disobeying a command of the Lord to rest. But Jesus also shows us that not only do we fail to obey the Lord by casting aside a Sabbath day of rest completely, we also fail to obey the Lord by making the Sabbath day a burden, like the Pharisees. So you might think that you observe a Sabbath when you actually don't. And that brings us to our second point, the gift. So as I mentioned earlier, when I was in college, I was involved in this huge campus ministry, something like 500 students. And during my senior year, I was invited to be in the Bible study led by the campus director. So the director of this huge campus ministry invited me and a few other upperclassmen to be in his Bible study. And, you know, it felt like an honor of sorts. You know, I always wanted to be prepared. I always wanted to be actively engaged when I was at Bible study. And so one time, we're at his house for Bible study. We're all in a circle when suddenly we hear snoring. And it didn't take long before we identified the culprit. One of the other guys in the group had fallen asleep during Bible study. And so we all looked around at each other, you know, feeling pretty relieved that we were not the one who had fallen asleep. And, you know, after all, how could you fall asleep during Bible study? And so finally someone said, you know, I'm going to wake him up. But our campus director stopped him, and he said, don't wake him up. He needs to rest, clearly. He needs sleep more than he needs to be at Bible study right now. And so in a sense, you know, he wanted to give this student rest. You know, he wanted to give him the gift of rest. And that's the heart of someone who understands Sabbath rest. Resting and observing a Sabbath is not just a command, although it obviously is that, but it's also a gift. You don't just have to rest, you get to rest. You see, in our passage, Jesus says something in his response to the Pharisees that's supremely important to remember about the Sabbath. In verse 27, he says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." Did you hear that? The Sabbath was made for you. You weren't made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for you. This is what the Pharisees missed. So they made the day of rest a burden, which is ironic, right? They made the Sabbath day of rest more work. So they were on Jesus' case because of what he and the disciples were doing on the Sabbath. But Jesus corrects them, and he shows us that the Sabbath is meant to be a gift, not a burden. There are three ways that the Sabbath is a gift for us and not a burden. And so first, the Sabbath is for our needs. Jesus shows us that works of necessity are perfectly appropriate on the Sabbath. So he and his disciples are plucking heads of grain so that they could eat. And that's what the Pharisees point out. They think that plucking heads of grain is work and therefore a violation of the Sabbath. But Jesus disagrees. And he tells the story of King David from the Old Testament and how when David needed food, he ate the bread of the presence, which technically it was not lawful for him to do. So what Jesus is saying is that while technically people should not work in the field on the Sabbath, he and the disciples weren't plucking grain as a job. They were feeding themselves because they needed to eat. And that's okay. It's good. We're permitted to do works of necessity on the Sabbath. And so you can cook a meal. You can take a shower. You can do all the things that help you maintain, you know, a certain quality of life. And not just life or death things, right? Jesus and the disciples, they could have just fasted that day. But that's not what the Sabbath is about. The Sabbath is more like a feast than a fast. The Sabbath is a gift, not a burden. Second thing that Jesus says the Sabbath is about is mercy. You see, the Pharisees don't like that he heals the man with the withered hand. But before they can say anything, Jesus beats them to the punch. And he asks, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill? It's lawful to do good and to save life because the Sabbath is for mercy. Works of mercy are good and right on the Sabbath. Because works of mercy give rest to others. And so it's perfectly in line with the heart of the Sabbath to be merciful. The commandment in Exodus even says something similar. It doesn't just say that you should not work. It says make sure that your son doesn't work, your daughter doesn't work, your male servant shouldn't work, your female servant shouldn't work, even your livestock shouldn't work. The sojourner among you should not work. The Sabbath is all about giving others rest too and being merciful. So the Sabbath is about need, it's about mercy, and lastly, the Sabbath is about freedom. We'll spend a little more time on this subpoint, freedom. So in Romans 14, the Apostle Paul says, one person esteems one day as better than another, while another person esteems all days alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. So what the Apostle Paul is getting at here is that there's great freedom around observing the Sabbath. Now, that freedom is not to decide whether or not you observe it, but there is freedom to decide how you observe it. That means that some activities may be appropriate and restful for someone on the Sabbath that aren't appropriate for you on the Sabbath. So maybe if you're a little more introverted, that means that you should have less social interaction on the Sabbath than a more extroverted person. Or if you're a professional fisherman, that means you probably shouldn't go fishing on the Sabbath, even if somebody who's not a fisherman finds fishing restful on the Sabbath. Each one of you should be fully convinced in your own mind what you are free to do and not to do on the Sabbath. There's even freedom as to what day you and your family observe a Sabbath rest. And look, you know, Sunday, the Lord's Day, today, makes an excellent choice. It makes Sabbath rest a gift at the beginning of your week before you go to work. And it's when Christians have, you know, historically gathered to worship, as we're doing right now, because Christ rose from the dead on the first day of the week. But it's not a law. You know, for some professions, you might have to work on a Sunday. You know, if you're a medical professional or law enforcement or an assistant pastor, right? You know, like today is not my day of Sabbath rest. I'm working today. And so I typically observe a Sabbath rest on Friday or Saturday. Again, there's not freedom to skip a day of rest, but there is freedom as it relates to what day you rest and how you rest. We can even go deeper on this topic of freedom, because freedom is really foundational to Sabbath rest. So if you didn't know, the Ten Commandments occur two times in the Bible. The first place, which I mentioned earlier, is Exodus 20. But the second place is in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5. In Deuteronomy 5, the fourth commandment is phrased slightly differently than in Exodus 20. So in the Exodus passage, I pointed out that the reason given for the command was creation. God rested after he created. But in Deuteronomy 5, a different reason is given. The reason in Deuteronomy 5 is that you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. So do you know the word for someone who can never take a day off? It's slave. If you can't take a day off to rest, you're a slave to something. And so while in Exodus, the command is tied to creation, you were created to rest, in Deuteronomy, the command is created to freedom, because Sabbath is freedom to people who are enslaved. Every time you observe a Sabbath, you tell false masters, I am not a slave. You see, the people who received that command in the first place, the Israelites, they were slaves in Egypt. So they never got a day off of work. They worked every single day. And so when God leads them out of slavery, tells them to observe a Sabbath day and rest from their work, they're not thinking about how inconvenient that's going to be. They're not thinking about the profits that they're going to lose. Their eyes are filling with tears because for the first time in centuries, they're being given the gift of rest. Some of you here today are slaves to something. You can't stop working. And so you can't receive that gift of rest. You might not even want it. Or you may want to rest, but you just don't know how to rest. And that takes us to our third point, the way. How do we rest? So we've seen the command to rest, the have to, the gift of rest, the get to, and now our last point is the way of rest, the how to. So we'll start off with some practical ways to rest, and then we'll finish up with how we can rest spiritually. But first, practically. The first how to will be no surprise, observe a Sabbath day of rest. I can't emphasize this enough. You know, pick a day that works for you and your family and set it aside. And commit to not doing any of the work that you would normally do the other 6 days of the week. It could be from, you know, midnight to midnight or 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. But I really do believe it should be a full day. New parents know this. You won't feel rested after a night of sleep, even if you get the total number of hours of sleep that you want, if they're interrupted every hour. So similarly, you need uninterrupted rest that only a whole day of Sabbath rest can give you. Now, once you set that day aside, you have to start identifying the things that hinder you from resting. But it can be tricky. Like, when you're at work, you know you're not resting. But what are the things that, you know, aren't your job, they're not your day job, your 9-to-5, Monday to Friday, but they still cause you to strive in some way, to work in some way? You know, at some point, planning your social life is work, or checking up on social media can be work. Maybe a complicated family outing can be work. Things related to, like, managing your household, banking, insurance, errands that you have to run, those things can be work for you. And everyone is different. Like, you know, my dad, he actually genuinely likes mowing the lawn. And so mowing the lawn's not work for him, but mowing the lawn would be work for me. Everyone's different. But what are the things that you typically do outside of your job that are still ultimately work and not restful? I think technology probably has to come up at some point. If you want to have any hope of having extended periods of rest, you're going to have to make your phone work for you, not the other way around. So manage your notifications. You know, which apps deserve to have push notifications on? You know, does social media really need to have a push notification or email? You know, in the past year, I've turned off push notifications for email on my phone, and now I check on email. Email doesn't check up on me. You have to take these defensive measures to protect your rest. But you also need to be on the offensive. So not just things not to do, things to do. What is restful for you? What gives you life? What's a joy to do? And so maybe first thing on that list would be extended and focused time connecting with the Lord. You know, praying and reading scripture without the normal time constraints of the work week. You know, I find that I'm often reading scripture with, you know, oh, but at 9 o'clock I need to stop so I can go do this thing. On the Sabbath, don't have that end time. Just read. And maybe not just a few verses or one chapter. Read an entire book. One of the short ones, Galatians, Ephesians. Write down your thoughts or your prayers in a journal. Reaffirm your trust in God. Admit that it was hard to stop and rest that day. You know, tell him about the fears you have about letting people down or not getting something important done. But ultimately, you're resting and trusting him. Now, what about the rest of the day? You know, resting and not working doesn't mean you just sit motionless all day. The point is to not be doing what you do the other 6 days of the week. And so what you could do is put some effort towards something that you normally don't have time to, that you enjoy, like a creative project or going on a hike or mastering a musical instrument, reading a good book, playing a game. You know, the key is selecting activities that refresh you and refresh your family. And lastly, resting will just require intentionality, a little bit of planning ahead. So in Exodus, the Israelites would gather twice as much food on the day before the Sabbath as a way to prepare for the Sabbath day, so they wouldn't have to collect food on the Sabbath. And so similarly, the principle, you're going to need to plan ahead a little to prepare for your Sabbath day of rest, get something done so that that day can be reserved for resting. And of course, you're going to need grace, because it's really difficult to change the flows and the habits of your weekly routine. And chances are it's going to take a while before you ever have a perfect Sabbath. You may need to make some changes incrementally. You know, maybe start with a half day of Sabbath rest. But the important thing is that you're heading in that direction of observing a Sabbath day to rest. Okay, those were some practical ways to rest. And hopefully they'll be helpful. But you should know that practical tips in and of themselves won't be enough. That deep internal spiritual restlessness has to be calmed before you could ever hope to get good physical rest. So how do we get that deep soul rest that we need? If we look back at Mark 2, Jesus says that he is Lord of the Sabbath, which means that he is the Lord of rest, which means that true rest can only be found in him. Jesus is telling us that if we think that finding rest is about a day of the week, then we're missing the point. Finding true rest is about finding him. And if Jesus is Lord, that means that he's our master. We serve him. But of course, we don't always serve him. But if we're not serving him, then our heart has to serve something else. And so if you're not serving Jesus, you're serving something else. Something other than Jesus is your master. But one of the most significant differences between Jesus and all other masters is that Jesus offers you rest. He commands it. Other masters don't. You know, other masters don't care about you at all. Other masters don't offer rest, but Jesus offers you rest. So you have to ask yourself, you know, could I take a day off to rest like Jesus asks In the next week or two, could you take a day completely off and rest? And if not, why not? Who are you trying to please? What master won't let you take a day off to rest? Earlier, I mentioned that we rest because God rested. God worked for 6 days during creation, and after each day, he looked at what he had made and said, "This is good." And then after the sixth day, when he had finished all of his work, he looked at what he had done and said that it wasn't just good, it was very good. And then he rested. But why? Why did God rest? He surely wasn't worn out. He wasn't tired. So why did God rest? He rested because he was finished, because he was satisfied. You see, you can't rest if you're not satisfied. You can't rest unless you have peace. So how does Jesus provide that satisfaction, that peace, that feeling that everything that needs to be done is done? We see in Isaiah 48:22, that was one of our reflection quotes. In Isaiah 48:22, it says that there's no peace or no rest for the wicked, for the sinful. But Jesus, who was neither wicked nor sinful, took on what wickedness and sin deserve. He took on the cross. The punishment that we deserved as sinful people, he suffered in our place. He suffered physically, with every breath bringing him closer to ultimately suffocating. And he suffered spiritually, experiencing an infinite restlessness as the face of his Father turned away from him. And at the end of it, he was able to say with his last breath, "It is finished." And because of that, anyone can come to God and say, "I can't find rest through my own life, through my own works. And so I want to rest on Jesus' life. I want to rest on his finished work." If you say that, God looks at you and says, "This is my son. This is my daughter, whom I love and with whom I am well pleased." He looks at you and says, "Very good. Everything that needs to be done is done. It is finished." And once you know he said that about you, then you can say it too. Everything that needs to be done is done. Every need I have has been met. Everything that needs to be done is done. And you can rest. So if you follow Christ, and even if you don't, you need to know that Jesus is the only source of that true rest. And so let me just close with his invitation to each and every one of you from our call to worship in Matthew 11. Jesus says, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Let me pray.